If God were speaking to you and three times in the same conversation he said, be strong and courageous, what would you be thinking? Have you ever had a moment when you had to tell one of your kids, you're going to have to be brave? That's never a good sign, is it? As a little kid, for some reason, I was terrified of that first loose tooth coming out. And we had just moved to a new house. And I guess that night, my parents said, just yank it. One little yank, and it'll come right out. And I was screaming my head off. The next day, one of the neighbors called and said, we know Mark is probably afraid of his new house. We heard him last night. They had to take me to the dentist to get that loose. I mean, he was just barely hanging on. They had to take me to the dentist to get that tooth out. And the dentist just went ahead and pulled both front teeth out. I remember them shooting across the floor because I don't think I was holding still. So anytime anybody says, be strong and courageous, they've got your attention, right? Well, Joshua, in the first chapter, Moses, after leading the people for over 40 years, is dead. And Joshua is the new leader. And three times in one conversation, God says, just be strong and courageous. Second time, he says, be strong and very courageous. The third time he says, be strong and courageous and do not be terrified. Oh my goodness. I think of you, Moses. I would be terrified. Well, it's impossible, absolutely impossible to be a living human being and not need courage at some time. I mean, almost every transition you face, you're going to need courage no matter how good it is. Then you have challenging things, you know, health issues, relationship issues. But everything needs a little bit of courage. I'm having the privilege of officiating several weddings. And, you know, to get married requires courage. I remember one of my sons, he got a prescription for anxiety medicine, and he said, I'm not anxious about the wedding. I'm anxious about the concept. Olivia and I heard a comedian the other night, and he's like 48, and he's engaged, getting married in October, and he says, I've never disappointed one human being so much, and I've discovered that's the nature of true love. You know, it's just a tough challenge. You're going to need courage all over the place. And if your parents, your kids are going to give you so many occasions for courage, for courage. Well, in this brief little story, we see God in a very interesting way showing up to Joshua when Joshua most likely needs some courage that he can't generate, even though God's told him, be strong and courageous. By the way, at the end of Joshua chapter 1, the people say to Joshua, we will follow you. Just be strong and courageous. I mean, that was the theme. And you would think it would be easy for Joshua. Who was he? He's described and defined as Moses' aide. If Moses had an assistant, it was Joshua. He spent so much time with Moses, When Moses went up to the mountain to receive the Ten Commandments, Joshua was the one that went with him. We don't know that he entered into the cloud, but Joshua was with him for those 40 days. When Moses would go to the tent of meeting and you enter in, it said he would talk with God as a friend face to face. Joshua would sit there at the tent. And when Moses would leave, Joshua would remain at the tent. I mean, I'd love to read Joshua's diary or hear his report of what it was like to be Moses' aide. When Moses sent 12 spies early into their exodus into the promised land, Joshua was one of the 12 he sent in. Apparently, his name was Hosea, and Moses changed his name for some reason. Joshua means God saves or God will save. It's where we get the word Jesus from, Yeshua, God will save. He sent Moses or Joshua in, and when the spies came back, you remember the story, 10 of them said, "This is no good. We can't go there. That people are too strong. We look like grasshoppers in our own sight compared to those people." There were two spies, Caleb and Joshua, who said, "It doesn't matter. God says go. God will provide. God will give us everything we need." So Joshua has had some huge experiences, but he still needs to be told to be strong and courageous. Later in the book of Joshua, he's leading the people. And you've got to get the picture. The Jordan River cuts right down sort of the middle of that Palestine area. And they're on the east bank, and the promised land is on the west bank, and they're going to cross into it. And God says, "I'm going to lead you in such a way that I will exalt you as I did Moses, so the people will see that I am with you." And we have another really water miracle story in which he tells, get the priest to get ready for the Ark of Covenant. Choose 12 men to go, for one for each tribe. Get ready. Here we go. And what God did, he held up, even though it was flood stage, he held up the Jordan River upstream, and it just in a heap, and it stopped. And the 12 men, they went out and they found stones, big boulders, and they crossed and they made an altar, or not an altar, but a monument. Their version of an Ebenezer. Anytime you sing Ebenezer in Come Thy Fount, you're speaking Hebrew, actually. It's a combination of two words. You know, God's my help. So my stone of help. So they built these stones. So they have this miraculous crossing. And the first thing they're going to encounter when they get on the other side is this big fortified city of Jericho. And they must look like ants compared to this city. And they send a couple of spies, and you're probably familiar with the Rahab story. But they're trying to figure out, you know, how are they going to attack this big fortified city? We're not going to go into the details of how they do that. You know that. You know, that the walls came tumbling down. There's a story about a church looking for a new pastor, and their pastor had left, and they have a pastoral candidate. And he says, "I'd love to meet some of the kids in your Sunday school program." And they take him around. "Yeah, well, this is little Johnny. His family is very involved, and some of our key members and leaders." And he says, "Oh, hey, Johnny, can you tell me who brought the walls of Jericho down?" Johnny looked up at him and said, "I don't know, but it wasn't me." You know the story. Then to chapter 5. Joshua is out looking, and he sees something he wasn't expecting. He sees a man standing in front of him. I mean, a warrior-like man. And I don't know if that was related to size or to grandeur, but he sees this man standing in front of him. This summer, the rest of the summer, we're going to do these sermon series called Encounters That Grow Us. encounters with God that grow us, that change us, that transform us. And this is our first example of an encounter that grows Joshua when it comes to courage. When it comes to courage, he encounters this warrior. And think of William Wallace in Braveheart or someone else. And he says, are you with them or with us? There are three ways, three things that need to happen to us that happened to Joshua that changes our experience of courage. You know? Joshua says, are you with us? Are you with them? And the angel gives a strange, or the warrior gives a strange answer, says, neither. Neither. But as the commander of the Lord's army, I have now come. In a movie, there'd be deep bass sounds. Maybe the earth would almost shake. As the commander of the Lord's army, I have now come. The whole conversation just changed. And the first thing that Joshua has to do, he has to switch sides. He has to switch sides. Because you see, anything that makes us afraid, any kind of challenge, makes us kind of hunker down or anchor our side of a challenge. Do you know what the biggest obstacle or the biggest response to or change or opposite of courage is? It's not fear. It's control. Control is always the first response of fear. Control is always our default to how can I get a hold of this thing that's kind of making me afraid. Matter of fact, it's so automatic, most of the time, we don't even know we're afraid. We're so ready to jump in and control it, to keep fear at bay, to keep fear from even coming to the surface. Whether it's with kids or work. Matter of fact, the older you get, one of the biggest dangers is you more and more reduce your life to whatever is not going to be risky, for whatever is not going to challenge you. That's what it means for many of us to be an adult, that we can control our life more and more and back up from the challenges of life. It's interesting when I see an individual, particularly if they're married and a couple going through a tough time, I can almost guarantee you by time the toughness surfaces that they've already isolated themselves. Maybe not the wife, but definitely the husband. If they're going through a tough time, you can almost guarantee that husband has backed up and closed off and nobody has a clue what's going on in their life. I remember a pastor I admired a lot had resigned because of moral failure. I was riding in a car with a close friend, one of my closest friends, and I said, if you were ever tempted, would you tell somebody? And he was honest. He said, no. I wouldn't lie if they asked me, but I would never tell someone. When we run into tough times, we want to anchor into our side. And there are only two sides. The side of Jericho, the side of something that's threatened me, and in my side. And when he says, are you with them or us? Captain of the Lord's army says, neither. I'm the only side that matters. You know, I'm your key reference point from now on. Because I have now come. And what he has to do, he's essentially has to, and it's kind of surprising the angel says that. You think he would say, yeah, I'm with you because you're God's people. But he wants to make sure that Joshua knows the only side to be on is God's side. God's side. And any kind of crisis, the best thing you can do is like, God, what's your perspective on this? You know, how do you look at this, God? And you can be sure right off the bat that God's not terrified by what's terrifying you. You can be sure that God's not freaking out, going, gosh, I never saw this coming. I never saw this challenge rising up in your life. What are we going to do? God doesn't do that. God's, as the commander of the Lord's army, I have now come. And because he switches sides, he's now, I got to be on God's side. The second thing that happens, he switches sides, but then he changes the question. The first question, when you're coming from your side, when the threat against you is the central reality and the primary reference point, the first question is, God, are you on my side? God, would you fix this? God, can I employ you as my heavenly deity and as my cosmic staff to fix this for me? And God said, no, let's get the side stuff correct first. If you get that correct, then you'll change the question. He asked another question, but it's not like, how are you going to help me? He says, what message do you have? What message does the Lord have for your servant? Wow. If there's something that's really challenging you, and you can change the question to that, 90% of the struggle is done. If you can say, God, this is going on, it's tough. I don't see an end to this. There's no relief. It's just going to get worse before it gets better. Can you be on my side? Instead of you say, what message, Lord, do you have for your servant? Look how he refers to himself. when you're on God's side, you're pretty automatically God's servant. You know what I mean? Just the magnitude. Captain of the Lord's army, and I have now come. What message do you have for your servant? I remember when my father was dying of lung cancer, and they gave him kind of the final, we need to send you home, and it's time for you to contact hospice. And I called him, and, you know, it had been a year-long battle, and we kept thinking, oh, this treatment's going to take care of it. This is going to help. Oh! And I remember talking to my dad on the phone that day, and I was in Massachusetts. He was in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I remember he had this almost euphoria, and maybe a psychologist would say it's a defense mechanism. The clarity of what was going to happen, not the clarity of the how, but that, you know, the end wasn't going to be, you know, years away, maybe months, maybe weeks. He had this sense of God's presence, and he was so caught up. I remember him talking to me about how Christ had suffered for him on the cross, and so this really wasn't, you know, I mean, it was a big, big deal. But he had a peace and a strength and a courage about it, somewhat coming from the clarity. And he told me he had listened to a sermon, you know, going through tough times, and he'd been encouraged to not ask the question, why? That's a legitimate question. The psalmists ask it all the time, why? But instead, he was asking the question, how? How might I experience you and glorify you in this, in this? When he got that news, he was on God's side. And he knew because of the cross that Jesus had suffered for him. It was, and you know, it was going to take care of everything, including his family. Changes the question. Switches sides, changes the question. Third thing he does, he takes off his shoes. He takes off his shoes. It's interesting that the angel, you know, the captain of the Lord's army, What message did you have? He doesn't right away say, okay, march around the city 7 times. He doesn't give the message. He says, hey, you're on God's side, so worship. Bow. Let's get everything absolutely right. If you want to have courage and you're going to be in the presence of God, it's time to bow, take off your shoes, because this place has now become really holy. It's so interesting that every time that God has these major encounters with people, it becomes a worship, you know, like with Moses. When Moses sees a burning bush and goes, duh, what's going on over there? I need to go check that out. And the first thing he hears is, take off your shoes. This is a holy place. Most wonderful thing. Later in Jewish worship life, the temple became the most holy place. But throughout their history, wherever God showed up became the holy place where you could bow. And I tell you, when you're bowing and overcome with God's presence, the things that terrify you, gosh, they shrink. They don't disappear. They don't disappear. I mean, they may try to even loom larger, but you rise with a greater strength, because you're coming now out of the presence, or in the presence of God. And it's become holy. And so you take off your shoes. Where might you need courage? To answer that question, you sort of say, what stresses me out most right now? You know, just follow the trail. If you can't figure out what stresses you out most, back up a little bit. Where am I numbing myself? Do you have any kind of odd behavior that's going on in your life? You're watching way too much TV at night? Are you becoming a YouTube or Facebook addict? Are you drinking a little bit more wine than usual or something else? Are you having growing mysterious pains that need medication? Are you attracted to the wrong person? Are you working more than ever? Are you becoming such an exercise maniac, losing weight? Is there behavior in your life that says, hey, you're avoiding something? You're afraid of something, and you're going to try to control it. Remember, control is fear's first response. Look for some kind of numbing activity or noise in your life that keeps you from being still. And then follow that to what's making you afraid or what's challenging you. You know? And then follow that, you know, to an encounter with God. Doesn't mean we're never, it means, you think God would have told him to be strong and courageous if he wasn't going to be afraid? I hate to tell you, I mean, a lot of people say, I wish God would speak to me as like he did the people in the Old Testament. Really? You really do? I wish I had the kind of conversion, God speaking to me like he did to Paul the Apostle. Really? You'd like to spend 3 days blind and God telling you what you're going to get to suffer for the sake of the gospel? That's what you want? No, no, no. Let God choose his times to speak to you. And when he does, it's not all about terrifying things that might happen. Many times it's the loving words of a father. I got this. I got this. Many times it might be the nurturing words of a mother. You can relax. You can relax. This is going to be okay. This is going to be okay. But the wonderful thing is, we can't grow. We can't grow without these occasions in our life that require an encounter with God. And the most wonderful thing, you think Joshua left there a nervous wreck? He had just had a glimpse of the awesomeness of God. I'm sure he left with assurance. Nothing had happened yet. The battle had not been engaged. The wonderful thing, when God tells you something, be strong and courageous, it's not just a warning. It's a preview of how God's going to be with you and be a resource for you. We love having kids in this church. And one of the best things you can do as a parent is to stress less and less and less and less and less. I know it's hard to say. It's easy for Libby and me. We don't have little kids at our house. We have big kids with big problems. I hate to tell you, it doesn't stop. The occasions to trust God just keep on coming. And the occasions to bless God for his provision, for his work in your life. Let me pray for you. God, if we're paying attention, if we're able to be present, first of all, to ourself and our experience, we might actually be present to you and be able to hear you. And we thank you that every preview of what needs to happen in our life is a preview of a promise being fulfilled of your care. We've sung this morning about how your love reaches to the heavens. May we be reminded that every time we look to the sky, your faithfulness. We thank you that the captain of the Lord's army showed up, changed the conversation, changed the question, put Joshua in a place to experience you. Lord, I pray, for whatever struggle is going on with any of us that will hear you first say, be strong and courageous. I will be with you. And we pray that we'll be a place that welcomes, embraces our struggles, that we don't see them as failures. We see them as inevitable parts of doing life together. So we commit anything that makes us afraid or challenges us to you. In Jesus' name, amen.